Manoš Bersto, Behind the Scenes Secrets of the Geneva Supercar Show. Dear audience, my name is Ludmila Dehr. I'm the Managing Director of Elite Experts Conferences, and I would like to welcome you to the next episode of the Elite Experts Conferences podcast. Whether at live events or in the digital world, we bring together cool, promising tech startups with exciting, innovative global players and generate a platform where the world of sustainable technology meets. Get to know the different companies, but also the inspiring leader personalities behind these brand names. Our motto is towards a better and cleaner future through knowledge transfer and technology. Today, I have a pleasure to have a remarkable guest who has made significant waves in the world of supercars and luxury automotive events. Joining me is Manoš Bersto, the co-founder and managing director of the Geneva Supercar Show. For those of you who are passionate about the supercar industry, the luxury events, and the fascinating personalities behind them, you will enjoy an outstanding episode. I already promise you that. Because Manoš' journey is nothing short of inspiring. From his humble beginnings in the sales world, making countless cold calls and facing rejection, to leading high-profile supercar shows in Monaco and now in Geneva, Manoš has truly seen and done it all. And something else is really remarkable about this episode, because I sit here live with Manoš in Monte Carlo, and we will delve into Manoš' early career, uncovering the lessons learned from his challenging but yet formative sales days. We will explore the incredible journey of creating the Geneva Supercar Show, the evolution of the supercars, and the innovative marketing strategies that attract diverse audiences to these luxury events. But that is not all. Manoš will also share his insights on personal development, the importance of a strong network, and how to maintain motivation in the face of daunting challenges. For aspiring entrepreneurs, Manoš offers invaluable advice and reflections on what he would tell his younger self and the key lesson that he has learned along the way. So, sit back, relax, and I will do my work always based on the three columns: educate, entertain, and inspire. This episode is truly packed with fascinating stories, expert insights, and a look into the glamorous but yet demanding world of the supercar events. Welcome, Manoš Bersto, to the Elite Experts Conferences Technology Podcast. Manoš, can you share a bit about your early life and what first sparked your interest in supercars and maybe also in general in automotive industry?
To be in the automotive industry was a coincidence. My first job was to work with an exhibition organizing company, which was focused on CIS Russia. And it was just by a coincidence that they put me into the automotive section. And my job there was really to find companies for the Moscow International Motor Show.
What was your career path before becoming the managing director of the Geneva Supercar Show?
Having worked at for the Russian International Motor Show for many years, I was then approached by a gentleman in Monaco who'd lived here for many years and had heard of my success in terms of sales being generated for the events industry. The gentleman said, "Manoj, would you like to organize a supercar show with me here in Monte Carlo?" And I said, "Yes, why not?" And I said, "But what's the guarantees that that will actually happen?" He said, "Well, we try. If it happens, it happens. If not, then you go back to England." So I actually agreed on his terms, and the show became success after the third year. Obviously, when I went to see the manufacturers here, the local manufacturers in the region, a lot of them didn't believe in such an event because the area is very luxurious anyway. Why would we need an event like this when the lifestyle is all about luxury here? And I said to them, it's not about the lifestyle, it's about encouraging you to find new clients for your product. And if you would like to be part of it, you're very welcome. If you would like to visit it, so be it.
It is interesting that you say that your image of being successful in sales was already so famous. Were you always such a natural talent in sales? Or you had also some, let's say, struggles and challenges in the beginning. So if you remember the first time when you just entered sales, how was it?
After I finished university, I worked in Germany in an architect's office because I studied building construction civil engineering. The managing director there, in a nice way, said, "Manos, you're very disruptive to, with the other architects. They need to concentrate because you like to talk. And it was actually him who suggested you need to go more into the sales because we can see that you like to meet new people, speak to new people, and find out how they're thinking. So I then decided to apply for a sales job. And like, and to answer your previous question, I decided to go into the events industry.
That is really super, super interesting. It must have been really like supernatural talent that you already had and you developed that further. Now, let me ask you a deeper question on that, because have you also had somebody who would be like a mentor for you in that time? Or what kind of influence you had that led you to your career in the beginning?
To be honest, I didn't have a mentor or an influencer behind me or who I would like to be, who I associated with. I think it's more the friends and family encouraging me to go into the sales part because of my ability in communication. And also, I think a lot is my British humor.
And I would add something else, because I mean, we know each other already, let's say, for 2 years now. You care about the people, and that is noticeable. And that's something that people can just feel, you know? You can just feel the energy if it's genuine or not. That is just additional information from my side, so to speak. Was there some kind of skills that you learned in your career, let's say early in your career, and that is still one of the most valuable skills in your current role as well?
I always, from my previous learning, I always got told you need to listen to the person. You need to find out what he wants. If you are selling whatever it is, an event, a magazine, so be it. Normally a person will say it's very expensive what you're selling. And I think the most important thing is to agree. Yes, it's expensive. But then get into the mind of that person and ask him, when you say it's expensive, what do you mean is expensive? Is it the transportation? Is it the marketing? Is it the show? Is it this? And then I ask them, what other shows do you go to? Many of them will say the Geneva International Motor Show. And I said, fantastic, wonderful, wonderful event. You know, it's one of my most favorite. It's, you'll get all the press there, the promotion, etc. And then I ask them, so what did you pay to participate for that? And they'll say, oh, we spent that much on lighting, transportation, hotels. And they'll say, in the end, they actually agree, actually, your show isn't, it's good value for money for the 4 days that we are allowed to participate at.
We can now focus a little bit more on the Geneva Supercar Show. But I would love first to know how it all started. So who called who? Whose idea was it, etc.? So tell me a little bit about the background story of the Geneva Supercar Show. What were at the beginning the key milestones for this event?
The event industry went on total hold for, I think, 2 years during COVID. Nothing happened. After COVID, things started to be released a bit. I got a call from Frank Muller. And I will go back that Frank Muller used to be one of my clients in my previous event. So I'd had a good relationship with them for many, many years. They heard that I had left my previous event. Why did I leave the previous event? Because I found that in any event that I like to do is I like the challenges. And for me, I'd hit all these challenges that I could in the event that I was organizing previously. So Frank Muller called me and said, look, Manoj, I understand that you are now, you're free. You have the contacts within the automotive industry for many, many years. I said, yes. They asked me to come over to the Watchland in Gentaut. We had a brief meeting with the management there. Within 30 minutes, he said, okay, I want you to organize the Geneva Motor Show. I want it to be something very elite, but really very, very high end, and for our clients.
You just said you love challenges. So were there also some kind of challenges that you even did not expect that just occurred in the beginning?
When I say challenges, that most of the events that I've done, I've never gone into an event where the event is already been established. That's not for me. That's just not my interest. I like to launch events. I like to research the market and find out what is required within that region. Now, when I started the Geneva Supercar Show, Geneva International Motor Show was still active. It was still becoming, it's still the show that everybody wanted to be in. But then, as in year two, there it was announced that they were no longer the show would take place. So there, you can see, was a challenge for me to improvise, to make the Geneva Supercar Show, not an international motor show, absolute no way, but to bring on the focus maybe 20 of the very best international supercars that people don't know of and haven't heard of, but again, a location where people can actually be a VIP for themselves for one day and actually touch the car. Because in most events, there is a barrier around the car and the manufacturer will not allow you to even be 4 meters near the car. At the Geneva show, we will allow it, obviously under the regulation of the manufacturer. Again, the show is outside. If a potential buyer or press or whoever it is would like to hear the engine of the car, they're welcome to do so because it's in an outside environment. What I will be doing for the Geneva Supercar Show 2025, I've designed a test drive track, which is on our private land, I'd like to say. The test drive track is for the potential buyer to get a feel of the car, the feel of the engine, but not about the speed. But we always, one of my sayings at my previous show, events that I did, was see it, drive it, buy it. I always feel that a static event is always, it's something everybody's intrigued about, but a active event, interactive event, is something that makes people even more interested.
The venue itself is also so beautiful. I mean, it's an outdoor event. It is in the nature. You see the Geneva Lake. And if it's a very beautiful summer day, it's just amazing atmosphere. I really have to add that. So it means, how is it actually similar and how is it different to your previous events? Or what is something that you really want to create that differentiates those two main events that you did in the past?
The last event where I worked at, the motor industry is focused on within the country. It's very much, it's got the Formula One. So, you know, the motor heritage is already there. The luxury market is already there. The supercars are already here. When you say with Geneva, it's a total different ambience. The Geneva Supercar Show is encouraging for these cars to be part of the beautiful area in Gentour, to, like you said, overlooking the Lake Geneva, overlooking the Mont Blanc. And we have two stately villas there as well. But what's very interesting there is that Geneva is not, in my view, is not a dedicated market just for supercars. It's a market for a variety of cars, whether it's from luxury supercar to mainstream. But everybody is intrigued and does dream about seeing these cars, whether it's on the street, whether it's on an exhibition. But in my past event, you would see these cars regularly. You would have to bring something very, very special to make that audience intrigued.
Today is the very last day of December 2024, and you made already two editions of the show. So what was the most memorable highlight or moment for you from the first or from the second edition? What really stood out to you personally?
I think the first thing is that I actually, when I agreed with Frank Muller to organize this show, it was in November. Then what we had to do is get intellectual property for Geneva Supercar Show, which took time. I only started really in February. So I had February, March, April, May, June. I had 6 months to organize show. It's normally, you say you need at least 1 year to organize an event. But thanks to the domain, thanks to the support of my partner, Frank Muller, and thanks also, and this is the biggest part, when you asked me this question previously, is I rang many of the manufacturers that already knew me and already trusted me. So they knew what I had delivered for them in previous years. I would easily deliver for them for the launch of the show. Then after the first show, which was fantastic, it was very small, but that's due to the time limit, but we just had to get the show on the road. Then year two, which was this year, we expanded slightly. We introduced a few luxury products. We then decided for the supercars to have their own paddock overlooking the Lake Geneva, overlooking Mont Blanc, and behind the stately villa. This was actually, location was actually chosen from the manufacturers themselves who had participated in year one. They found that the ambience down below was a lot nicer than when we started in the paddock at the top. In year three, I want to now go more interactive. I want the potential audience to feel as though that they are part of the event. They're not just coming to visit. You know, I want them to really feel part of it. If there are simulators, let's get them in the simulators. If there's a yacht, let's get them to experience this yacht. Okay, it won't be on water this year, but hopefully next year. And also to be part of the test drive experience around the show. And again, we will be offering our VIP clients a full VIP experience with caviar, champagne, and a goodie bag upon departure of the show.
I would love to talk about the enduring appeal of supercars. So why are people so fascinated by them? What is the fascination of the supercars? What is it all about? So why are people so drawn to these kinds of luxury events?
I would say a lot of people are drawn to this event is that we all like to dream. Some of us, it's a dream. Some of us, it's a reality. If it's a dream, like for me, when I was a small child, it was a dream for me to see a supercar, to touch a supercar, to sit inside a supercar. But it's an experience. It's an experience. When you come to the show, you're offered a VIP badge. The badge alone is giving you your status. I'm a VIP. I'm here for the day. I've dedicated my time to the Geneva Supercar Show. Then I'm offered to see the most luxury of the new collection of Frank Muller watches. But then also I'm offered a glass of champagne, which I can walk around the domain with, not forgetting I have my VIP badge still on me, so people can recognize who I am. And then also it's something that it's, you know, I have a day's experience to see a number of supercars, luxury watches, you know, very bespoke items. Maybe one day I could afford it, maybe I can't, they will say. But I want to feel great for the one day. And then when this whole experience, they're back in that office, but it's something they would cherish for the rest of their life, whether they put it on their Instagram page or, but most of them will post it on the World Wide Web because they want to show the people the experience that they had.
So in the end, for that day at least, you're not selling tickets, you are selling experiences, you're selling dreams.
I'm selling the experience. But I'm giving that person the experience that he's maybe been dreaming about. You know, if I look at some of the people who send me emails, they are they're also, it's like a gratitude. You know, I get emails sometimes where people say to me, oh, Manoj, I would like to buy a VIP ticket for my son. And I said, why? Oh, because he's at the moment he's in Formula 3. He would love to see it be to your show because he's seen these cars on the internet, but he's never actually been near one. And it's just, it's a dream come true for them.
Is that event also a little bit like a family experience? Do people come also as families?
Yes, there's a lot of families that turn up on the weekends. Again, you know, what is interesting about this whole thing is that we offer three invitations. We offer the standard ticket, we offer a VIP experience, and we also sell a four-day experience. Now, on the standard tickets, this has never happened to me at any event, where we literally sold 2%, if that. VIP, 80%. And the rest, the four-day experience. But the four-day experience, I would say, is more for the influencers who really want to take their time each day and spend the time on working with the manufacturer. But it's very interesting that, you know, it is the most of these people only bought VIP invitations.
Buying the status for one day.
Buying the status for one day, exactly.
And now we can also look a little bit at the technical evolution of the supercars. You have been in this industry of supercars for so many decades. So how do you see the evolution of supercars over the next decade?
Everything is put on to the electric side of it at the moment. We know that some people buy the electric, some people stay with the petrol engine. But for me, the reality is when I speak to the certain supercar manufacturers who I've known for many, many years, and they say, Manoj, we're going to launch our new car at your event. And I'll say to them, well, I'm guessing that you're going to go ecological. And they say, absolutely no way. But our clients want to hear the sound, want to hear the roar. For me, yes, you will always get a certain amount of the electric supercars, but I think the majority will always stay with the petrol engine because that's what their buyers want. And why do they want it? Because they liked that roaring noise and it makes them feel, you know, it's that.
I definitely see your point here. And you know what? We can make a bet because I bet against it.
You do?
You know, I believe in the spirit of change. And innovation comes currently with the transition to electrification. So maybe, you know, it could be also hydrogen engines. So whatever else is possible when it comes to alternative powertrains. Because particularly in supercars, the OEM have the money to go and create some kind of rare technologies that would be way too expensive for mainstream cars. And that does not mean that those supercars have to be purely electric supercars. Could be something different.
You're absolutely right, because if you look at this year, we have the majority will be petrol, that's for sure. But there we do have quite a few electric supercars coming out as well, and one hydrogen. And I do feel that it is going to be a interesting competition at one point between hydrogen and electric. But when I look at the electric side, Europe is very much into the electric, and the non-European are at the moment, for me, very high in the hydrogen side of it.
But that is just the manufacturing and technological part. The other part is the infrastructure, no? Mm-hmm. Also then, to drive the car and to be able to maintain it, let's say, in the day-to-day life, even so we should not forget that the supercars are usually not the daily cars. But that can be a challenge for hydrogen, right?
But also, most of these cars, don't forget, these are not everyday cars that we're using, huh? The supercar, whether it's hydrogen, electric, solar, whatever it may be, you know, it's a car that it's used only on certain occasions. To be honest, because if I saw as visitors, it's quite interesting also at the Geneva Supercar Show, people came to see the supercars, but they actually came in supercars. And you'll see that on our promotional videos, the sort of cars that people came in. But again, you know, it's they have the supercar which they're currently driving, and they were interested to come to the show to see how the technology of their supercar has been upgraded to eventually maybe change it.
We just talked about the engines, right? But when we look at the car as a whole system, let's say, is it that the people expect more and more advanced technologies, innovations, or is there also another part? The ones that want more tradition, more old school design, etc. Where's the trend going in that regard?
I think it's both, to be honest. It's both. I wouldn't say it's more going in the left direction or the right direction. I think it's both.
So it's like personal taste.
It's a personal taste. Yeah, it's an absolute personal taste. From what have you liked from the beginning? Have you liked more the classic style side of it? Or do you like more the modern looking, you know, aggressive supercar? Do you like the petrol side of it? Or do you like more the electric, which is a very smooth, luxurious sound?
But at the same time, I mean, also how the whole interior design is made. So does it have to look futuristic?
I think it needs to be more futuristic. It needs to be more that you're like in a cockpit. But I think the most important thing is safety, because some of these cars, they do incredible speeds. An incredible example is, look at the Formula One. Look how, go back 10 years ago, where safety is always been paramount, always been. But now if you look at if a Formula One overturns, you'd think, oh, they would never survive that. But again, look at the technology, how it's changed on that. You know, the speed is higher, the safety is top of the top. And I think that's how the cars are also built, you know.
I want also to mention something for our audience that might not be familiar with this event yet. Because when the first edition happened, I remember that I talked there to some people that came from the racing cars. That means you don't have just street cars that are exhibited there, you have also racing cars. So some cars are legally not allowed to be on the roads. Will that also be the case for the next edition?
Yes, as of today, we have two manufacturers dedicated only to the racetracks, both one of them being in the Formula 3 and one of them being in the Formula 2. They've designed these cars for the clients to experience. They just want to experience on the racetrack. That's it. They may use it once a year. And that's that. Yeah. So we're going to have two racing cars at the show.
And also, by the way, so that we make it clear, it's not something like a faraway dream. Because I remember this discussion, and I'm not good with names and brand names, but I'm very good with remembering the details of what was said. Because I was surprised during the first edition of the show how affordable racing cars are. It starts like around 60,000 Swiss francs, etc. So it's incredibly affordable. So it's not about selling dream cars that you will never be able to afford, but it's really accessible. And now let me mention one really, really tricky topic, and that is the importance of sustainability in the supercar industry. Is it actually naive for me to expect a supercar to be sustainable? Or is that something that is also wanted in the industry, maybe?
Good question.
I told you it's a tricky question.
It's a good question, but it's a hard question to answer. Again, it depends. I mean, reality, yes, we need to follow the sustainability. That's for sure. We have to. We should do.
And who do you mean by saying we at this point?
Me as an exhibition organizer, I need to ensure that the event is catering for all abilities, whether it's for ecological, it's for the petrol side, it's got to be there for every person to have a choice. What am I going to go for? Am I going to go for ecological? Am I going to go for sustainability? Am I going to go stick with the petrol side of it? But that's the choice of the person. You know, I'm just offering him that. But when you ask me which one should we go, I can't say that to you. I can't answer that, unfortunately. But I can say that everybody is doing their bit for the environment. I think all the manufacturers are doing whatever they can. They appreciate that there is a must. Wherever possible, they can incorporate it on their technology.
Thanks also for your honesty. I mean, as I said, it is a discussion. So therefore, it's really good that you still ask yourself all those questions. Now, I would say we do also have to talk a little bit about the marketing and audience engagement that you have to bring into that event. So what is the definition of the modern marketing that is currently happening in the supercar industry? Are there also some kinds of trends that you see in the industry when it comes to marketing?
From the clients I know, everything changed after COVID. Everybody used to go to motor shows, general motor shows, and they were very happy, you know. But a lot of these motor shows were lasting maybe for 1 week, maybe for 2 weeks. And then COVID came. And a lot of people thought, right, well, we can't just stop, you know. We're doing a lot of it online. They launched a lot of cars online. Then COVID, the market reopened. And the manufacturer thought, right, now we don't want to go. I'm saying from the clients that I know, I'm not saying for everybody in general, but the ones that I work with very closely, a lot of them, they organize their own private event on a racetrack. So maybe 10 of their clients were helicoptered into the racetrack. They had a VIP experience, but then they could test the car around the track itself. My concept with the Geneva Supercar Show is to make it a very niche event with maybe 20, 25 international local manufacturers. But again, why? Because this buying person, the potential buyer, doesn't want to go to these mass motor shows anymore. They don't want to be pushed around. They don't want to be standing in a queue waiting to hear that. No, you know, we have the opportunity of having a very big domain where we can really spread around the event. I would say in about 6,000 square meters, but we don't put everybody all together. We like to spread everybody around so that the buyer has his own time and space to look at it on his own, not with somebody else on the stand. You know, that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I am doing at the Geneva. You know, I think it's very, very important to give that buyer, you know, a quiet luxury environment for him to look at whatever is on offer. There is not lots and lots of people pushing him around, people spilling this or doing that. That's the way forward for me.
And also, again, it is just a big, big difference when you imagine the huge motor show usually have big halls, right? You're inside.
Kind
of trapped. And in comparison, at the Geneva Supercar Show, you have the beautiful surroundings with the nature, the lake. If you're overwhelmed for 1 minute, let's say, you just walk around under the trees, you look at the lake, you just relax.
And also the Geneva show, it's an outside. We offer everybody a 25 square meter tent with, you know, the tent. But also there is no lights because we're an outside natural light. And I think it's very important for that potential person when he's looking to buy whatever it is the natural light, not the artificial light, which gives it the wrong, not the wrong impression, no, that's not right, but it gives them a different impression. Because the car is, you know, when you're going to buy this car, it's not going to be under extreme lights. It's going to be in the daylight. And what you see is what others see and how he sees it.
And then what you see is what you get. You know, there's also this famous saying that the confused mind doesn't buy. So if you have many choices or too many choices, psychologically, we know that we don't buy. We don't make this decision. So being a niche event, being small, it's even an advantage. What are your strategies how to attract different target groups to the Geneva Supercar Show? Or maybe first we can define also what are the different target groups for you?
In terms of participation, it's The number one is always going to be the Geneva Supercar Show. It says it in the title. But this year I am incorporating three or four very high-end luxury products. I would also like, when people come to the show, it's not, you're not just coming on your own. Either you're coming with your family or you're coming as a couple. And I need to ensure this year, year three, is that there is an experience for him and her. And this year, the for her will be the luxury side, selected number of products. And for him and her will be obviously the main feature of the show is the supercar show. You'll be amazed how many of the females at the show they were enticing. They were enticing the girlfriend, the boyfriend, or husband to let's go there. You know, the first point of call is obviously the cars, and it's quite interesting. The cars are, you know, they are, what are they, about 50 steps away from the show, and then people usually went to the cars first, and then they work their way up. But I think it's also very important is that, and I do, it's very important from our side, is we have this VIP lounge. You know, we have champagne by my partner Bollinger. Then you have a full menu. And the menu of food isn't just from 12 o'clock till 2 o'clock, because we believe that even if you've come as a VIP, you know, you still have that experience. So the food is literally served all the way until 1 hour before closing. So it doesn't matter what time you come, you're still entitled to all the food. You'll have champagne, red wine, white wine, gin, caviar, a selection of hot food, cold food, and a dessert menu. And a sit down around the table.
I can confirm that it was really, really nice event experience during the whole day. So now I would love to go deeper in the marketing that you do. So how important is digital marketing for you and working with social media for promoting the Geneva Supercar Show?
It's very important. I would say digital market is number one now, because you reach a target audience first instantly and worldwide. If I do, for instance, if I do Geneva marketing, I'm going for the Geneva crowd. If I'm going for the Zurich market, I'm going for that. But if I want the international community, and I do, when I say international community, is don't forget the show is very international orientated in terms of manufacturers. So the manufacturers are bringing their own clients, their top, I would say top 10 or 20 clients, wherever they may be from. But it's for me to ensure that from digital marketing is that we get the brand. It's all about getting the brand out. It's not actually promoting the show, it's promoting the brand. That's for me. The brand is very important. And it's got to become one day. Oh yes, the Geneva show. Yeah, I need to be there. But why? You have to ask yourself why. Always ask yourself why should it be there? Because it's the right target audience. It's a great ambience, and the partners who are part of the show are inviting their client who are not going to these mainstream events. This is what you have to really, really understand, is that the clients who are the clients who are inviting their clients, they're coming specifically to meet with them. It's just by chance they're at the Geneva Supercar Show. But again, you know, a lot of them won't know the area of Gentor where we do it. And when they come, it's first of all, it's a beautiful location for them. But in answer to your question, digital marketing is absolutely important, whether it's through the LinkedIn, Instagram or so, because it's instant. And you can also, you can track who's liking it, who's disliking it, if they're disliking. Like I always said in my previous, why do you dislike it? What would you like to see? What would you like to see? I think it's very important. They may say, oh, well, how about XYZ? We'd like to have this at the show. Is it possible? We can try.
I think you make very individual adjustments for your clients. Still, you have lots and lots of competition because they are world-known events that have a similar approach. How to become relevant in that niche and how to remain relevant and exciting in such a competitive market. So how do you do that?
I think the only answer to that is listen to what your client wants and listen to what the buyer wants. That's all I can say on that one, to be honest. It's, you have to always listen to what, you know, don't, even if you want to do something at the show and you feel it's right, but for me, I always ask whether it's the client, do you think, would this be a benefit for you? And he'll say, not really. And I say, why? And he'll give me the reasons why, or he'll say, actually, that'd be a great idea, but could you incorporate this, for instance? You know, a good example is the test drive track that we're doing this year. That came from a certain amount of, I wouldn't say the supercars, because their car is different, but I would say more for the luxury side of it. They felt that this year, they took a lot of them on the road. And I said to them, well, you don't have to take, always try and keep the potential buyer at the event. Don't take them out of the event, because their mind is then in other places. But if you keep them at the event all the time, their mind is, whether it's on the car, whether it's on the amp, whatever it is, but they're focused on that.
What motivates you actually to keep pushing the boundaries for the events you organize? Because you know what, I remember in the beginning you said you were somebody who is rather a pioneering mind. Let's say you want to start this, you want to build that, not just, you know, to have an already established event and just to improve that step by step. But how do you push towards this excellence of the most possible premium event?
It's basically, again, it's about the exhibition itself, making ensuring that everything is high level, ensuring that when a VIP comes, that he doesn't have to wait, ensuring that, yeah, it's basically just ensuring that the show goes from A to B in exactly the way that it should go.
I know how stressful it can be. And I mean, those days at the event, I see you running around, etc. It's a lot of stress to handle, a lot of pressure, etc., etc. Everything there has to be perfect. At the same time, how do you handle that stress and the pressure? So especially when you organize such premium events.
To be honest, yes, there is a stress, of course, but I have a very, first of all, it's a very niche event, which, to be honest, when I've organized major motor shows, it's very easy, because you're just selling the space. The manufacturer then has an architect to build it. Everything comes in, so you don't have to worry about it. But when you do these niche events, you have to make sure that every single part is absolutely up to scratch. You know, this year we had the opening on, as usual, on a Thursday. Presentations were made. We had 6 ambassadors who came from Geneva and Zurich. Each of them, obviously, they called before to say, to schedule a time so there wasn't a conflict, which was very well organized. Some ambassadors staying for 3 hours, some of them staying for 1 hour. And also the ambassadors came to support the country of the manufacturer. So if, for instance, the Italian ambassador, when he came, I introduced him to the Italian manufacturer. And some of them who were very new on the market, they asked the ambassador, how do we do this? How can we achieve this in Switzerland? Because it is the help from the embassy to help the international manufacturers to become successful in Switzerland. And this is the role why I invited the ambassadors, because some of them had questions on how they could get help from the consuls or the embassies to pursue their ambition within the Swiss market. Because certain things are very, not complicated, but require a lot of paperwork. And at least the ambassadors were able to point them in the right direction.
And you continue organizing the third edition. Of course, it's now not just the draft, but it's already well planned out. But what is your big vision for the future of that event when you go, let's say, to the fourth or fifth edition?
I don't want to make it an international motor show, that's for sure. I want it to be really, the ambition is really to encourage more interactive technology products that we see a lot on the internet, whether it's a flying car, whether it's a flying drone, whether it's more, I think that's what I would like to incorporate at one stage. You have the supercar, we have the yacht, we may have the helicopter, we have the luxury, but I think when people see on the internet, I don't know, say the flying car, it's something that they think is very futuristic. But I would like to bring that futuristic eventually to the Geneva Supercar Show.
Next year in the summer of 2025, you will have the driving tracks. Can we guess which year you will have the flying tracks?
It all depends, really. Again, like you, it all depends on where the market is in terms of being able to display it to the public and to, most importantly, the press. I would love it to be in, maybe not this year, but maybe to start small in 2026. But again, which is it's totally normal. It's like a car. The futuristic drone or whatever it is, it has to be top. It has to be ready. You know, one failure and it's not very good for the person who's behind it. So I'm ready for it. It's something that I have to be working on because, you know, the future is what everybody thinks about. You know, reality, when I say the future, we're now in December the 31st, 2024. By 12 o'clock tonight, what's the first thing when it strikes New Year's? Everybody thinks, what's my year going to be like next? What's the year going to be like next year? Again, what's the year going to be like for Geneva Supercar Show? But yes, we have to go more futuristic.
I'm against this kind of hoping and wishing. I'm for making. I think you are too. So let's envision that and make it happen. That's how it works.
And also another thing is to get these drones or whatever it is. Yes, the land is private, but you have to get these permissions to do it. And it depends whether that area allows that permission. Because I don't want something just sitting there on the grass. It makes absolutely no sense to me. But it has to, whether it goes up in the sky, maybe 1 meter, 2 meters. But that's what really gets the show, you know, to another level.
Exactly. To experience that and not just to see it.
Yeah. Maybe a robot, something, you know, that sort of, because we see now everywhere on the internet, you know, this company's developing this robot. And reality is not one day, as we speak now, certain robots are making certain things for us that we don't know about. And wouldn't it be great to have a robot walking around around the domain one day and then, you know, with that manufacturer and explaining what's the benefit of it?
Walking, talking robots during the event. Can you imagine that?
My dream is the opening ceremony that we had. It's two things. Either I may have the flying car this year. I don't know if you know Palvi. I'm in discussions with them. It's the flying car. I launched their car in Monaco. Mm-hmm. And now they're thinking about it. And I said to them, either what I would like to do is that when the opening ceremony happens on Thursday, everybody does their presentations. I would love to say, look, this is what the show is all about. And you see the car coming in. It won't be able to fly because of the permissions, but at least the rotators may come, and that's a demonstration. Or my dream is to have at the opening ceremony, coming in, walking from the domain, this robot, and that's it.
I can see it.
I think this is just, it's because it's something different. I think, you know, you have to be different in these things, because if you're just always just going to speak the hi, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, you know, to the show. This year, I want to do something interactive. Next year, sorry. Because this year, as you saw, I put the Pagani there. But I put the Pagani there for a very good reason, because it was organized by students. in collaboration with Pagani. And that's what intrigued a lot of people. It wasn't the, and you've not seen it before. And that's what I need to have in front, something that's not seen before.
When I remember it correctly, you had cars that were designed by students already in two editions, right? I'm pretty sure that already in the first edition, you had already an impressive project designed by students. Is that correct?
Yeah. In the first one, you had the hydrogen, the Alpine one as well. Yeah. It's because I worked together with the University of Torino, IED. Mm-hmm. And I call them every time. I said, is there something that you would like me to help for your students? You know, and like I did in my speech this year, I said the reason why I put that Pagani there is because we all speak about the present designers, but we don't think about the future designers, which is these people who've made this car.
Good that you're investing here in the future. That's very kind. And now another question. How do you see in general the role of events like this show influencing also the general automotive industry? In that case, that after some years, let's say 5 to 10 years or so, that we will see these kind of technologies also on the streetcars?
That reality is a lot of the technology that you're seeing, I would not say in the supercars, but in the concept cars. The dream is you build the concept, you show the concept, and eventually, if that concept is good, whatever it may be, it will go into the mainstream. That's the dream of any manufacturer, that the mainstream cars will buy it, whatever that may be, for sure.
Regarding the concept cars, the reality is quite brutal, because it is a very low percentage that really ends up being implemented on the street cars versus the concept cars.
I know, but here's a good example. When the indicator, it used to go blink, 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 blink. Now, what most of the new cars, what they do, they have that line that goes like that. That is a very good example of how what they incorporated in a concept cars many years ago. And now all the mainstream are using it. So whoever did the patent on that is should be very pleased with himself.
I would love to ask you something else, because I see lots of ideas that you generate, and particularly when you talk about it, your eyes light up and you are excited about this and that. So where do you take your inspiration from outside of the automotive world? Is that because you read a lot, or is that because you talk to a lot of people with completely different backgrounds? So where does the inspiration come from for you?
You said it. I speak to a lot of people with various backgrounds. Not only in cars, but all sorts of backgrounds. And they give me the ideas or to incorporate these ideas. And then obviously the internet, the TV, it gives you also inspiration to think, oh, maybe that's something we can do. But I think the world, to be honest, is the social media is the biggest one, where you can see something and you think, now, is that a concept? Is that not a concept? And then I try to research or get somebody to help me to research. No, Manoj, it's just a concept. It's never. Or yes, here's the email. We need to find out that. Or I just contact them directly to find out if it's something they would like to show. And they will inform me very quickly, yes, it's something for them or not.
That's really interesting to see where it all comes from. And what is your most favorite social media? So where do we find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn.
Looking back, you have quite an impressive career behind you. What advice would you give to your younger self when you just first started out in your career? So imagine you can meet your, let's say, 18 years old self, and you have an opportunity to talk to him and give one piece of advice. What advice would that be?
Follow your ambition. Don't let the obstacles stop you. And most important thing is, when you've hit what you want to do, listen to what the target audience wants. That's it, just listen to what they want. You may want to do one thing, that's great. But at the end of the day, and a show is all about the audience to have that experience. And you need to listen to what they want.
And if we combine both, I mean, if you still hit an obstacle, if you still find yourself in the front of some big challenges, what then? Well, life is not always easy, right?
Life is not always easy. An exhibition isn't always easy. You can make 20 calls a day. You may get 20 no's a day. But it's up to you, the personality, whether you let that affect you or not let it affect you. When I started my career out in exhibitions, yes, I was the company. We were asked to make at least 30 to 50 calls a day, which would probably be no, 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 no. And they wanted to see how resilient you were. Can you manage it or this and that? And if you couldn't manage it, then you weren't the right person for that job. But I kind of learned not to affect me too much. You just move on.
In the beginning, it was still affecting you?
At the beginning, of course, it's slightly, it always affects you some when someone says, no, actually, no, I don't want to go. Of course it does. But eventually you work around that. I mean, if someone, you know, if it's someone I really, really want, I really try and find out, you know, what is there? How can we work together? Look, at least come to visit the show. Have a look for yourself. Here's a free VIP experience. Let me show you personally around. Let me introduce you to some of the clients, potential buyers, and then they may think again. Or, like, and that's totally normal for me as well, is we only, the show is only 3 years old. They want to see, is this show now, is it just going to be here and then gone? Or is it going to be something that's very, very for the future for us? And so far, we're in year three. And I think that's also very, very important. They want to, it's like when you buy anything or purchase something. Is this product just going to be, is it worth me investing this? Or let's see if it's still how it's going to develop. And that's what the people want to see. How's the show developing? Year four, year five, year six, etc. And it has a lot of potential because of the vast amount of space that we have outside. It's vast. And it's all private land, which makes a big, big difference. It's also located 2 minutes walk from the Frank Muller Geneva HQ head office. What we also do is, for certain clients, we offer them a factory experience as well. So there's a lot we can do. Not just the VIPs, not just the cars, but it really is an experience of things that they wouldn't expect normally from any other event.
Just the whole day surrounded by beautiful things, cars, luxury experience. And we talked already a little bit about the challenges you had and what you learned, etc. But was there also a particular mistake or failure that you made that ended up being such a valuable experience that you actually do not regret it afterwards?
No, I mean, I don't think there's any big mistake. I think some people will say that I was, my previous event that I managed, I launched it in 2004, I left it in 2019. A lot of people would say to me, but why? You've worked on this now for so many years, you've established it, you know, people know you. But like I said, if it doesn't give you that buzz or that inside you anymore, I don't want to just be, it's like turning a magazine, you go to the next page, you go to the next page, you go, no. And it's for that reason I stopped, and I needed a new challenge, because otherwise you're just like going to go, it's the same process again, and that's not for me. I need to then have that new challenge, build up something, then hopefully develop into something very, very special. And also, you know, the Geneva Supercar Show, it is, in my view, the only dedicated supercar show serving Switzerland. There's a lot of events there, but there is not a dedicated VIP experience supercar show. And I think that's what the market is looking for.
And my last question for today is, what is your life motto and why?
I really don't have a life motto, no.
But do you have a most favorite quote or something that inspires you, something that touches your soul, let's say?
Just perseverance. That's just perseverance.
Is that what makes the difference? Because some people give up too early, you would say. Is that what makes the difference of being successful or not, in your opinion?
No, it's what makes the difference is But like from year when I really started is to build with, at the time when you call someone, he's your client. But if you look at the first time you call someone, he's your client. He's a potential client. You say, hello, it's Manoj here, Geneva Supercar Show. How are you? You know, and he'll say, very good, thank you. What do you want normally? Get to the point. Get to the point. I always say get to the point within 3 minutes. He'll judge very quickly. I'll judge very quickly. Is this worth going on? Or shall we just now stop it? Because it's maybe not good for my reputation, for Geneva, and he's just getting bored. So you've got 3 minutes. Then what you do is once you've got that that rapport with them, or friendship with them, you know, a lot of the clients that I just, they may have never come to my show, but I call them, hey, how are you? I'm in Germany at the moment. I'm in Switzerland at the moment. I'm building a relationship with them. And these clients have also then said to me, Manoj, maybe they haven't managed to do what they want, but they said, hey, Manoj, my friend is doing this. I tell him he should definitely do with you because I did this and this and that. It's building the relationship with that person and building a trustful relationship. That's also very important. Huh? Building whatever you promise to that client that you will offer him during the 4 days of the event, make sure you keep to that. Only offer in the scope that you are able to offer them. But again, you know, when the clients come to our show, we have opening times for the visitor. But you know what? The exhibitor, it's not like you have to come at 9:30, leave at 7:30. If the manufacturer wants to stay there till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, just sit with a glass of wine, champagne around the stand to network with other clients, no problem for me. We allow that. I remember last year we were there till about probably 11, 12 o'clock. I was just trying to get the exhibitors to talk to each other as well, because maybe there's some synergy between them as well. You don't know. They may want to do a partnership. But so I think it's just very important is just to build a relationship with these people, whether they participate or not. I don't care, but it's, you know, because you never know for the future what industry they may be going into or what they may be, you know, what they can offer both sides.
And that is again what I mentioned in the beginning, what makes you very unique in your way, how you build relationships. You deeply care about the people. It's not just about, let's say, purely transactional business relationship because they do something for you. No, you invest in them regardless of what will come back or not.
But that's why when you do such a niche event like this one, is that when you do an international motor show, you lose one, you lose two, you lose three, you lose four. Doesn't matter how many mainstream manufacturers, doesn't matter. I have probably, I would say 25 maximum 25 clients that I really like to, 25, 30 of them. I lose one, I lose one. I lose two, I lose two. Okay, if it was a mainstream, this show would be full by tomorrow. It would, but no, you know, and why, again, is that I'm waiting for a lot of the cars to be launched. They want to launch the cars now at the Geneva Supercar Show. But again, it depends, where is the development in time for June? And sometimes, and it's happened every year, it happens, unfortunately, certain cars say, no, unfortunately, we're not going to be ready. But next year, you know, we will be ready. And this year already, I can't say the company it is, but there will be a very big supercar launch, and not from the European market.
That sounds interesting. Manoj, thank you very much for taking the time to be on our podcast. We are really sitting here live in Monaco on the December 31st of 2024 and discussing the whole event, how it's done, how it was, what is planned. Let's see how you can bring your vision alive and how the future looks like. I appreciate every insight, every experience, and every piece of wisdom that you shared today. Thank you very much for being such a great guest.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. And don't forget, visit the Geneva Supercar Show.
There are many ways to achieve a more sustainable future. There are many companies and innovative leaders who choose and actively go very different ways. Let's just not forget one thing. No matter how different the ways are, the big goal is one and the same. See you very soon in the next episode.